Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man, and for the next hour, you're in Finland. And I'm here this evening with John Clark. Good evening, John.
Hello, Andy. How are you tonight?
I'm pretty good. I'm going to turn your volume up a little so we get some, we can hear you plainly. Well, glad to have you here. Today is Monday, July 2nd, 2007. And a lot happened on July 2nd. Now, we say that every day of the year, but it's really true today. This is the day in 1964 that Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
Absolutely gigantic. You know, you sent me a list of important events that occurred on this date. I was scanning the document and got down to that one, and I thought, whoa, that's got to be the one that he wants to talk about the most.
Well, that's true, and we don't have to say a lot about it. I just thought it's worth mentioning.
Worth mentioning? My golly, it's one of the most historic events, pieces of legislation in the history of the country.
Well, not only that, we also, I was going to save the heavy stuff for later, but of course, we are at the end of the first term of this Supreme Court, the Roberts Supreme Court, and there have been a lot of 5-4 decisions. We're not going through them all, but clearly liberals are unhappy with the direction the court's going, and conservatives are quite happy.
Mm-hmm. And that's a fair assessment.
And in fact, one of the things that they did is they're scaling back on the interpretation of Brown versus the Board of Education, not quite the civil rights, but it was about integration of the schools.
Mm-hmm.
And but they're basically saying, my brother Mike made this argument to me about 15 years ago. Basically, this latest 5-4 decision threw out integration plans in two cities, that were based primarily or exclusively on race. That is, they were moving kids around just on their race. And John Roberts took the position that my brother Mike took 15 years ago when he was trying to bait me and other liberals in the family at a family reunion. And he said, how could you argue about this? There should be no discrimination, so we should treat everyone the same. That's fair and balanced. And, of course, mm-hmm. the argument is that after 300 years of slavery, that's not a level playing field, and we owe people who were held back for 300 years a little something.
Well, I guess you're right. We owe them a little something, but I'm not so sure that's something we owe them. But we could talk about that at some length if you want to right now, or we could save that for later in the program. It's interesting. You mentioned two cities. And one of the two cities is Louisville, Kentucky.
That's
and of course,
true.
I'm talking to you from Kentucky. And this is something that naturally everybody in the state who's remotely interested in these kinds of things has followed for many years now. It's been a long time. But dates back to the 70s. And there were numerous riots, all kinds of disruption in Louisville over this issue. And it's really funny. I read an article in the paper, or an opinion piece in the paper yesterday, it was so full of untruths, flat falsehoods, I couldn't believe it as I read it. What it said was that the folks in Louisville and in, what, Seattle is the other one?
Yes.
All thought it was a plan that worked perfectly, and they've all been happy with it, blacks and whites alike, all these many years. And I read that, and I thought, how in the world could that get into the paper? Because that is so flatly untrue.
Was this the Herald Leader?
Well, it was the Herald Leader, but it was a nationally syndicated column.
Even the Herald Leader might not try getting away with that. Of course,
the Herald Leader would never, and it, what, 80 miles from Louisville, would never print something like that because that is clearly not true. As a matter of fact, I can tell you who it is. Not one of my favorite columnists, Eugene Robinson.
Oh, interesting. He's a regular columnist for the Washington Post right here. You know, I didn't read that article today.
Yeah, we have him. He's a regularly syndicated in the Herald Leader here, too. But it's his opinion piece is absolutely littered with total falsehoods.
Interesting.
About this, particularly what I know about the Louisville case.
Now, before we get off race, I want to ask a couple more questions. One is, when you said there were riots in Louisville, did you mean over this, or you meant back in the race riots of the 60s and 70s?
Well, I meant over busing, specifically over busing.
But years ago, not recently.
In the late 70s.
Yes, yes. Okay, good. And It's also
but nobody's ever liked it ever since then.
So I have two more things.
It was mandated by the courts. Louisville happened to be the city where it was mandated by the courts.
Yeah, busing was a bad idea. And frankly, I'm in general agreement with Roberts. I mean, basically, his line was a little glib. He said, the way to make sure you don't discriminate is to not discriminate. The problem is there's still inequities, and we got lousy schools in the inner cities, and we don't seem to know what to do about that.
Well, here's what to do about it. As a matter of fact, the Supreme Court decision opened the door for it, and there have been a number of other cases where it's actually worked. And they said, we're not going to let you discriminate on the basis of race. But it's clear that people with certain socioeconomic status don't have the same opportunities as people who are living in more affluent neighborhoods and all that kind of thing and go to schools that are better funded and all that kind of thing. So it allows them to adjust school populations based on socioeconomic status. And if they do that right, they wind up basically adjusting the populations by race as well.
Right. No,
so
I'm with you.
They've completely left the door open for that.
That's true. Anyway, a couple more items that one has to do with race, one has to do with stupidity. The first is that this is the birthday of Medgar Evans.
Yeah. Major figure in the history of black activism.
I was introduced to him through the Joan Baez song. I forget what the song is, but I still remember the line, they shot Medgar in the back.
Yeah. Yeah, now, I was just saying that Eugene Robinson is not one of my favorite Afro-American columnists. On the other hand, I like what Leonard Pitts writes.
Uh-huh.
I almost always like it. And, of course, he's been in a lot of trouble lately for refusing to call a murder of a couple of white kids, or not kids, a couple in their 20s by four black kids, a hate crime. So he wouldn't acknowledge that that's a hate crime. And
oh, you
got to
call. You got to call.
I don't think it is.
You've got to call a spade a spade. I'm sorry.
Oh, please. You're going to be in a lot of trouble for that.
People know we're joking. And then finally, I have to say, I turned over in my chair tonight. I was watching a little bit of Hardball before I went to my Toastmasters meeting. And now I've been highly critical of other shows. Bill O'Reilly has Michelle Melkin substituting for his show. Now, he claims he's not a conservative, but he's never had anyone but conservatives take over his chair. And she is this ultra-conservative woman. She's just a little bit to the left of Ann Coulter, maybe.
But she's cute.
She's gorgeous. But that doesn't make up for a lack of intellect, in my view. But my point is, I criticize him for doing that. I criticize Chris Matthews for bringing Ann Coulter on for an hour. There's other conservative talk shows that bring in these ultra-conservative hosts that I think don't have any business hosting a show. Chris Matthews wasn't there tonight, and the guest host was Al Sharpton.
What?
I never saw such a thing. He's had news people be his guest host. I don't know what's going on. Like, it's maybe he was taken to the hospital with a heart attack, and Sharpton was scheduled to be the guest, and they didn't have anybody else. But, and I find Sharpton very entertaining. He has grown on me over the years. He can be extremely entertaining, and he has some insights, but he's not what you want leading Hardball.
No.
You talk about replacing a host with somebody who's ultra liberal. I just thought that was a sham. Ugh.
Yeah, that's incredible.
It is incredible.
And he has no real credibility too.
Exactly.
I mean, he has credibility as a leader in the black community, but as far as just simply telling the truth or sticking pretty close to it, he doesn't have any credibility.
Well, most of us have never forgiven him for the Tawana Brawley fiasco. But
yeah.
Beyond that, you know you're going to get a liberal viewpoint out of him. So when he gets another liberal or two on there to talk about anything from presidential politics to presidential subpoenas, you're not going to get anything resembling Hardball. So anyway, I was disappointed. But let's move on. Go ahead.
Well, let me drop back for just a moment, too, because the reason I was talking about Leonard Pitts was to specifically tie it to Medgar Evers. This last incident with Pitts earned him the ire of the white supremacists, and so one of them posted his home address and his phone number on the web.
That's
and his
not
email
good.
Address. And so ever since then, he's gotten hundreds of poorly spelled death threats, you know, using the worst kind of language and all that kind of stuff. And he says in his latest column that ran in the paper yesterday that now he really appreciates the courage that it took for people like Medgar Evers at that particular time during the civil rights struggle to live just openly in the community where everybody knew where he lived, everybody knew what his address was. And, of course, look what happened to him.
Right. Well, you know, if there's anything worse than a death threat, it's a poorly spelled death threat.
Yeah, well, those people who send death threats are not exactly on the top of the educational ladder, generally.
Well, hopefully they won't know how to find their way to that address.
Well, that's of course, that's a problem. You know, Pitts has a family.
Right,
yeah,
right.
That would scare me to death.
Well, we don't usually start off with such serious topics as the racial divide in America, but let's move on to some of the biggest news of the week, and that is that there are 12 7-Elevens, count them, 12 in America, that are changing their names and their look to Quickie Marts. Do you know about this one?
Did you say Quickie Marts?
Yes.
You mean, in other words, a place where you might go for a quickie?
No, it's a creation of Matt Groening in The Simpsons. The Simpsons go to the Quickie Mart for a variety of products, including, now what are they called? Are they sprinkle? I'm trying to think what they call. So he goes there to buy Radioactive Man comic books, Krusty O cereal, Sprinkalicious donuts.
Mm-hmm.
And
sounds like something my daughter would like.
Right, exactly. And then there's some kind of horchata coffee, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. And then finally, they have this the equivalent of a Slurpee. But anyway, these are all names made up by The Simpsons. So The Simpson movie is coming out, and there's a tie-in with 7-Eleven. And so they've chosen a dozen 7-Elevens in the country, and one of them's right here in the D.C. area. And they've taken the sign down, and they're renaming them Quickie Marts, and they got Simpson characters all over them. And they're serving these products that the Simpsons made famous that are fictitious products, except for the next month leading up to the July 29th release of the Simpsons movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's an interesting item on that. The Simpsons live in a town called Springfield.
That's true.
And there are currently 20 little towns across the country that are vying for the honor of having the movie premiere in their town. And one of them is Springfield, Kentucky, 26 miles from my hometown of Danville, Kentucky. And it's renowned for being one of the three closest places you could drive to from dry Danville to buy alcohol. When I was a teenager.
And I know this is an easy question for you, but what can you tell me? What is Springfield, Illinois famous for?
Springfield, Illinois is famous for Abraham Lincoln.
That's where he's buried.
Yeah, but of course he was born in Kentucky.
That's true.
And so we like to claim him as a native son. But all those 20 towns, the 20 Springfields, have all submitted a video making the case why Springfield should be, their Springfield should be the one where the premiere is. And there's actually a connection. It turns out that Matt Groening, the guy who does the show, has been in Springfield. Maybe he has relatives around here. But certain of the facts surrounding Springfield have been mentioned on the show that seem to describe the Springfield, Kentucky. So we actually got a good shot at getting the movie premiere here.
Interesting.
So we'll see how it goes.
Well, we will be back in 60 seconds with more of the Andy Finn Show with John Clark.
Okay.
Greetings, sensationalists from across the fruity plains.
You're listening to the Andy Finn Show.
The smooth talk of the town.
Cool. Well, all right. We are back on the Andy Finn Show. And, John, we got a few more light items in the news. For example, the lawyer for former astronaut Lisa Nowak has made it very clear that she did not wear diapers on her 950-mile road trip in which she drove across the country to confront a romantic rival.
Mm-hmm.
He called it the biggest lie in this preposterous tale. For example, they were toddler-sized diapers in her car, so she couldn't possibly have worn them, and they were several years old.
what's she doing with toddler-sized diapers that are several years old in her car?
They don't say, but she doesn't have to say. Anyway,
Almost everybody cleans out their cars a little bit more often than that.
So many people joked about this. I thought The Daily Show handled it best when it originally happened. Jon Stewart, of course, these guys all did stand-up comedy, and he said, what else would you expect with a bizarre tale that combines sex and violence and an inherently funny word? Because one of the tricks in stand-up comedy or in public speaking is you find inherently funny words and use them. So there just are certain words that are funny. Jell-O is funny. Pudding is not.
Yeah. George Carlin was great at that, or still is great at that.
Well, he does those naughty words, too, which we don't do on this show.
Well, he does those naughty words, and, of course, he did them on purpose for Pacifica, but also he just takes lots of words and makes them sound, you know, really strange.
Now, I got a few light technology items. Did you hear about this issue on Wikipedia? When the pro wrestler, what was his name? Chris Bednarik? I can't remember his name. When he died, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Shot himself.
He shot himself, but he killed his wife. But before the bodies were found, she was missing, or they were whatever it was. 14 hours before the bodies were found, his entry on Wikipedia had been changed, saying that he had died, that they had died.
Well, he must have done it himself then.
No, that's what they suspected, is that it was that's what it was, and an anonymous user came forward. Of course, they could trace it to a particular IP address, and it was in the same town. It turns out an anonymous user came forward and said they did it, and he did this in an online discussion page that's attached to Wikipedia, and he said that there was enough rumor and speculation, he just assumed it was true, and so he reported her death as fact before they found the bodies. But everybody thought they had a lead, but it's just interesting the ways in which the internet ties in now to crimes in the real world or events in the physical world.
I would love to know how that all came about and how there would be rumor and speculation, because I think the way that it happened was he killed his wife on Friday night and killed his son sometime on Saturday and then killed himself sometime on Sunday night.
Yeah, well, I didn't follow that sequence. I just noticed this one item. I wasn't paying a lot of attention to that.
I wonder if he was talking to friends of his in town or something like that.
I think I was watching Paris coverage at that point.
Well, that's much more important.
Yeah. Paris, France. So,
by the way, I thought it was just morally reprehensible how the World Wrestling Entertainment, WWE, jumped all over this and almost immediately had a three-hour tribute to this guy.
Well, that's interesting because the very first thing they did is they released a statement saying, under no circumstances could steroids have had anything to do with this, mm-hmm. which is interesting since they couldn't possibly know that.
Yeah, but I've read an article in the paper about this. I didn't realize it, but dozens of wrestlers have died before they ever hit the age of 50. And literally dozens of them.
That's true. And if you've seen some of their bodies really look weird afterwards, right? I don't know if it's that they don't keep up the exercise or what, but steroids take a real toll on the body, whether it kills you or not.
Yeah, they showed some pictures of him, this latest one, when he started his career, and he was a physically fit guy, and then here he is in his mid-40s, or what, 42 or something like that, and he's just absolutely chiseled and cut and muscle-bound. That doesn't happen naturally as you age.
That's right.
You know, it just doesn't.
Yeah, right. Well, and the pictures of Barry Bonds over the years, you can see his physique go from a normal human being to this superhuman guy. Now, he was a great athlete to begin with, and so I'm not taking anything away from his accomplishments, except I think he looked and saw Mark McGwire hitting 70 home runs and Sammy Sosa hitting 66 and said, hey, these guys are passing me up. All I've got to do is do what they do, and I can hit 73.
Yeah, and by the way, the guys you mentioned there, they all have biceps like tree trunks.
Yes.
Not the kind of thing that occurs in nature, except in the cases of people like me where, you know, I come by that kind of thing naturally.
Yeah.
Don't really have to work at it too hard.
You don't need any artificial steroids.
No, not a bit.
Found the natural ones. Well, the point, reason I mentioned Barry Bonds is that Barry Bonds was voted this week to the baseball All-Star team for the National League, and it would have been interesting if he hadn't. The fans, he was in fourth place among outfielders, and if you don't make the top three, you're not automatically on the team. So then the players either have to vote you in or the fans. I'm sorry, or the manager has to select you. And it's in his home park, and there was a chance that even though he's only five home runs from the all-time record, Hank Aaron's all-time record for home runs, because of the steroid taint, there was a chance he was going to be passed over for the All-Star game in his home park right at the time he's breaking the record. But he got elected by the fans, so it's a moot point, as we like to say in radio.
Did you say moot point?
Yes, I did. Everyone misuses the word moot, and so I thought I would mispronounce it.
Yeah, that's one of my pet peeves. And in general, that's a pet peeve, not just that particular word, but misuse of words.
Yes.
So I better not get started on that.
No, we'll lose whatever audience it is we have here.
Yeah,
you know?
We'll run them off really quick.
Hey, there was an interesting full-page ad in the Saturday sports section of the Washington Post. I open up, I look to the back page, and here's a full-page ad of a woman in a racing suit, a car racing suit, with Sitco on the front, long brunette hair, beautiful woman, good figure, and it says, "Got Milka? Venezuela racer Milka Duno is making history by becoming the first Latino to join the IndyCar series, and Sitco is fueling her sprint in the SunTrust Indy Challenge." So this past weekend, she was in Richmond International Raceway and racing. But here's a nobody yet on the circuit. But because she's a babe, they've got a full-page ad in the Washington Post trying to get people to run down to Richmond to, I suppose, see her?
It's got to happen to every sport. As a matter of fact, it's amazing that it hasn't penetrated NASCAR to this point.
Well, there have been women before in NASCAR, right?
There have been women, but yeah, and the last one, what's her name? Danny
DeVito. Oh, sorry, I'm free associating.
No, I can't remember her name. There have been women racers. None of them have been what you would call paragons of attractiveness until the last one, and she's pretty good looking. And so she was great for the sport, got endorsements, doing commercials and all that kind of thing. So it had to happen that America, the people who operate NASCAR, are going to start going for absolute babes to drive race cars because it's going to generate revenue. It's already what happened in professional wrestling.
Not only that, I was watching the Women's U.S. Open this weekend. This is golf. And Christy Kerr won her first major. Now, the women's golf circuit currently has all these very young women. This woman, is she 20 or 22? Mm-hmm. She's 29. But there's Morgan Pressel has won a major already. She kind of exploded and finished third or fifth in the end. But she's only 20. There's all these young women. And I have to say that there are some very attractive women as well near the top of the leaderboard in women's golf. So I don't mean to be too shallow about it. It's just I was watching for the golf.
Okay, you're a guy.
Oh, of course I am. But here's the thing. In golf, you actually can see someone's physique. You really can't see Milka's physique very well in her racing suit when she's buried
she's
in her car.
No, she's got to come out of that racing suit. That's the thing that we'll all be anticipating is when she does come out of that racing suit.
And I have to tell you, there's something else going on in women's golf that I don't like, and it's the Tiger Woods effect transferred to Michelle Wee. On Saturday, I think Michelle Wee withdrew on Saturday. 2 weeks ago, she dropped out of a tournament. A week ago, or maybe it was 3 weeks ago, then 2 weeks ago or a week ago, she finished last, like 29 over par. Now, she's had this wrist problem since February, and she didn't take enough time off, et cetera, et cetera. But because she's a phenom, she is getting all the press. Somebody else was leading. She was dropping out, and she was nowhere near the leaderboard. And yet her picture was splashed all over the paper, huge picture. And the headlines both on the article on the cover page, front page of the sports section on Saturday, and then the inside article, both of them, Michelle Wee's name was featured. And then incidentally, oh, yeah, there are other golfers in the tournament.
Well, now, why do you suppose that is?
Well, she's 17, and she's a phenom, and she's attractive.
Oh, she's extremely attractive. She's 6 feet tall and has legs that just go of about 5 feet of the six.
And, well, that's ugly to me, 5 foot legs.
And she's a teenager.
Exactly.
She's a teenager.
But I call that the Tiger Woods effect because, you know, Tiger maybe not make the cut in a tournament, and the headline is, you know, Tiger's round. It's always about Tiger, no matter who's leading. That's just the way it is in golf. It's the star system. You have to make certain people stars is what they decided.
I'm trying to remember. I read something about Tiger Woods over the weekend. It had something to do with when he wasn't, if he wasn't leading after three rounds, then he was, I can't remember.
So in the majors,
or dropped out or whatever, something like that.
So we just had the U.S. Open, and the statistic was that in the 29 majors where he was not leading after three rounds, he's 0 for 29.
Oh, yeah. That's
but, see, that's a bit misleading to me because you, a Phil Mickelson or some of these other guys, if you're in that many, you're 0 for 41. Very few people come from behind in a major and win. So it's a little bit of an odd statistic to be citing. You know, here's a guy that's already won 12 majors, and most people, if you win one or two, that's a career.
That's true, yeah.
But
yeah,
anyway.
Tiger's, he's an amazing guy, but, you know, he's also a handsome guy. You know, that might be one reason he's so photogenic and all that kind of thing. Great story behind him, but, you know, women's tennis is also, the Wimbledon's been going on, and women's tennis is also one that features some pretty attractive players, some of whom have parlayed their looks into other careers, regardless of their ability to play tennis.
Well, I think we're specifically thinking of Anna Kournikova.
Well, she's the one you would think of, because I said regardless of their ability to play tennis.
That's right. She's
I don't think she ever won anything.
She has never won a major, a professional tournament, I don't believe, and yet she is one of the most famous women in tennis.
On the other hand, you've got Maria Sharapova.
Right.
And she can really play.
You know, I can't tell you who the most attractive men are in tennis, and I think that's probably a good thing.
That is a good thing.
All right, well, we're going to take a short...
I'm not paying attention.
We're going to take a short break and identify WEBR Radio. The Andy Finn Show will be back in a couple minutes.